The deal is this, you know, you will call in as a donor. We'll either take the call or take the online donation. We'll arrange for a tow truck to go and pick it up, hopefully within the first day or two, bring it back to a local auction, prepare it, and then we'll take it to auction unless it's a non-runner and it needs to be disassembled or recycled, in which case we'll handle that as well. And let's assume we get $1,200 for the vehicle at auction. There's probably a $200 tow fee in there. That would leave $1,000 and we'd split. You get $800, we get $200. Of the $200, about $100 runs the operation and the other $100 goes to serve our own nonprofit, which is feeding people, housing people, and advocating for those that can't advocate for themselves here in San Diego.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Howard Pearl. He is CEO of the Charitable Adult Rides and Services, or CARS. Howard, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Howard, tell us about CARS.
Wow, it's an interesting story. CARS was started really by mischance. Our parent organization, which is a fairly large social services agency here in San Diego, people were bringing their cars to their parking lot and leaving them there. And 22 years ago, they were having a sale. They had four or five cars in their parking lot, and somebody from our local PBS and NPR station here, KPBS, came by and said, "This is really a good idea for fundraising. Do you think you could do it for us?"
Wait, hang on. Why were people leaving their cars? To donate them specifically?
They were donating the cars. Yeah, they were calling and saying, "I have this car. If you want to sell it and make the money, that would be great."
Ah.
And they said, "Well, gee, okay, we might be able to do that for you." So KPBS signed an agreement and started to advertise on the air about, donate your car to us and we'll turn it into money. You know, one thing led to the other and another, another, and another. And we now currently have about 640 odd, I think, NPR and PBS stations that we do car, vehicle, and some real estate donation for some of them and a lot of real estate donation for the others. It grew from there. When I arrived here, they were doing pretty much just the public media partners and one or two others. We now have a little over 8,000 nonprofits amongst many of the AAAs that you would recognize: American Red Cross, St. Jude Children Research, Shriners, Kidney, Susan Coleman, amongst many, the really good guys. And of course, we love this vehicle donation program because it does three things. One, it generates a lot of revenue. Two, the margins are reasonable. We give 80 cents on the dollar back to our partners. Everybody gets. We run this pretty tightly, having come from commercial, from for-profit, known how to run it lean, has helped. So we get big money back. And we've been able to establish a network across the country where I think our best year we did about 154,000 vehicles, if you can imagine. And we're not the guys with that obnoxious jingle. B2B, so nobody really knows it's us. They call and donate to your nonprofit because we believe you should be promoting your mission, not ours.
Okay, so hang on. Let me ask you a question. So when my husband and I were trying to figure out what to do with my old Honda Civic, I heard that the Salvation Army accepted donations. And I like the Salvation Army. So I called the Salvation Army and they said, okay, we'll send someone out. So is it the case that the Salvation Army took my car or could they have used CARS?
Where were you when you donated it? What city?
In Alexandria, Virginia.
Yeah, that would have been us.
Oh, so basically what you're doing is you're providing this as a service to nonprofits.
That's correct. In fact, Salvation Army, they just transitioned their Los Angeles-based facility to us. We do their entire Western region. And we actually work closely with the guys who do the Eastern base. But yes, that's correct. It's a service we provide at no cost.
At no cost?
At no cost. Well, we turn over 80%.
Right.
But all they do is sign the agreement and the rest is done by us. And it gets pretty interesting. One, we've got like 10 full-time people in the marketing department. We do all the marketing, not for you, but we create every possible iteration of marketing material you need, from stuff you can put on your website to, if you want a pay-per-click program, we'll manage that at no extra cost to you, just whatever it costs, you know, print, electronic. We also produce radio and television spots, particularly for the nonprofit guys, the NPR guys. We also do use their network, you know, celebrities, but also some of the religious broadcasters and so on as well. And the deal is this, you know, you will call in as a donor. We'll either take the call or take the online donation. We'll arrange for a tow truck to go and pick it up, hopefully within the first day or two, bring it back to a local auction, prepare it, and then we'll take it to auction, unless it's a non-runner and it needs to be disassembled or recycled, in which case we'll handle that as well. And let's assume we get $1,200 for the vehicle at auction. There's probably a $200 tow fee in there. That would leave $1,000 and we'd split. You get $800, we get $200. Of the $200, about $100 runs the operation and the other $100 goes to serve our own nonprofit, which is feeding people, housing people, and advocating for those that can't advocate for themselves here in San Diego.
Howard, this is amazing. So what you're doing is you're allowing nonprofits to accept vehicle donations and real estate donations. And those are potentially large moneymaker donations, because when I donated, you know, the old red Audi, they said that was worth $6,000-$7,000. So that's a lot of money. I normally wouldn't give them that much money as a donation, but this isn't something they could do on their own. And what you've done is you've created the infrastructure and the system to make this happen at scale.
That is 100% correct, particularly for national organizations, you know, somebody like Coleman, you want to garner that. And so what the marketing guys do and what the BI department, the business intelligence guys do, is they do the research. So we don't necessarily use the same ad to attract somebody in San Francisco as we might use in Alexandria. Not to say that Virginians are strange or that San Franciscans are strange, but one of them definitely is. Sure, which one? But they're all lovely at this point. And why it's important to have an organization like ours, I'll be very brief on this, but sometimes when you donate a car and it's sold, it goes to somebody who doesn't necessarily transition the ownership. So we make sure that the liability is released, the release liability and so on. And if the car happens to end up attracting a charge because of a ticket or a toll and they don't pay it and they send you a note, you just have to get in touch with us. I don't care if it's 1 year or 10 years. And we have a tickets and toll department and a title department. All that is taken care of. No worries at all. I don't care how long ago it is. We recognize that the most valuable part of this equation is the donor, period. We'll do somersaults over broken glass without the benefit of a shirt to protect the donor. The data is yours. The donor is yours. We never use it. We never sell it. We never contact them ever, other than to send them the thank you note, which is also their receipt or their 1023, whatever that is.
Wow. Well, Howard, we're going to get into the things that you're doing to grow and thrive. But first, let's get into your journey. So you have this amazing story. You worked for public companies, manufacturing companies, tech companies, and now you're CEO of Cars. How does that happen?
Well, as I was telling you earlier, it was really sort of an accident. I had a recruiter, executive recruiter that I was actually friends with and have done me a couple of favors here and there along the way. And she called me up and she said, look, I think I have a great job for you. I had just returned from China. I'd taken this short turnaround job up in Canada. And then I came down and I got myself back involved with the tech firm. So I was chief operating officer of this tech firm of somebody I knew and was helping them to build it. And she said, well, I want you to come in and do this interview. And she told me what it was. And I said, you know, it doesn't sound like something I'm that interested in, but if you really need it done, let's go for the interview. And what I ended up doing at the interview was saying, look, I understand what you need. It's really not for me, but I've got a pretty good file of people I've met across the way that I think I could probably find you somebody that would be well-suited for the job. I'd be happy to recruit them, you know, exit the current CEO and help to onboard the new, and then move on. I really got other plans for myself. So I agreed to a 45 to 90 day maximum window. And that's really how I ended up here.
Wait, so what did the recruiter see in the job and in you that she thought you'd be good for this? Because you don't have experience running a nonprofit, or you didn't.
I didn't. Now I certainly know better, but I think my automotive experience, I think my time marketing vehicles for the Ford Motor Company, you know, one was understanding the vehicle automobile business, having manufactured and created a new category in the off-road vehicle, search and rescue vehicles and so on, and then having built and run a large manufacturing plant overseas. I think all she saw was cars and automotive and cars and automotive, and it had something to do with cars. And so you probably fit.
Ah, okay. So you take the interim job, and that was 9 years ago. What happened?
Yeah. You know, I was coming home at night, and my wife said to me one evening, she said, "Have you noticed by chance you've been coming home like happy and with a smile on your face and not grouchy?" Guys, anything, what you're doing? I don't remember the moment, but apparently I was very effusive, telling her about the job and the people and what it did and the mission and, oh my gosh, the possibilities. And she said, "Well, why don't you stay? Like, I personally don't think we need to live in a house with another startup." Well, I said, "Okay. You know, I haven't been asked to stay." And she looked at me, you know, women are so much smarter than men, for God's sakes. You know, and the older you get, the more you realize that. But she said to me, "Do you not think if you said you'd be willing to stay that they might be interested in keeping?" And I said, "Well, that's kind of an arrogant presumption, isn't it?" And she said, "You know, you're an idiot."
Well, they wanted you in the first place.
Yeah. So, like I said, women are smarter than men. So she said, "Why don't you talk to your board?" And so I was hooked, because within a few days, I recognized the incredible amount of talent that was on this team, but was not being managed well.
Ah.
I could see it. And they were all sort of, some of them had been out applying for other jobs. They were getting ready to defect, but you could see that they were like, "Well, maybe we don't have to. Let's see what this guy does." So I liked them and I liked the attitude. And there wasn't any real negativity. It was just, we want to get on with this. And then, of course, how do you not fall in love with a mission? I've had a great career, and I don't know that my career is over or ended, but I was thinking, you know, if I decide I want to retire, what a wonderful way to take 30-odd years of experience in the C-suite and give it back.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me like a bolt of lightning. Again, forgive the self-aggrandizement. I really don't mean it that way, but you've got all this experience. And when I look at the way nonprofits are run, they could benefit from a little bit more of a business approach. Like around here, there's only two words that matter, right? Gratitude and margin. People are giving you things. So you've got to have institutional gratitude. It has to come deep, 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 deep from within. In fact, around here, nobody comes to work here that hasn't read the Gratitude Diaries. I was going to show this later, but here we are.
And the Gratitude Diaries is a book by Janice Kaplan, okay?
Yeah. Janice Kaplan's a wonderful, the number one selling whatever on Amazon. The paperback is like a couple of bucks, but it's just an amazing little journey about the value of gratitude. So, you know, my thing is nobody comes to work here who doesn't read the book first.
Oh.
And they have to demonstrate that they've read it. So when they start, part of their onboarding package is go sit in a room and read this book. Take it home, keep a copy by your bedside. And I can tell you that for many employees, we get so many notes of thanks. You know, I was having trouble communicating with my daughter. We just weren't getting along. And we both sat down and started to read the book. And it's amazing how far a small, sincere compliment goes. It's amazing how when you actually reach out to people and say, "You know, I don't think I'd realized how wonderful it is that I come down in the morning and my breakfast is in the process of being made." So one is gratitude. And the other, of course, is margin.
Margin. Okay. Yep.
I don't have to go into depth on this. No money, no margin.
Right.
No margin, no money, no money, no mission. It's that simple. So, you know, back to basics, we run our business because we need to have a surplus at the end in order to fulfill our charitable mission. And we just happen to be fortunate that we've got a very unusual business that raises money by raising money for other nonprofits.
Howard, let's dive into this a little bit, because this is just amazing stuff. Gratitude and margin. So, how did you develop this gratitude as a leadership model or leadership philosophy? Where did that come from?
My mother?
another amazing woman in your life. But is this something that has been a thread throughout your career in all the other jobs?
I can't honestly say that my first C-suite job, I was a particularly gracious human being. Not necessarily the case back then. And we're talking decades ago, you know, the style, the leadership was my way or whatever. I think what I've come to learn over the years, the real keys to modern management and realistic and effective management start with simple words like respect. Why would I treat you any differently than I would want to be treated? I'm the leader. My job is to articulate the vision and create the vacuum for you to move into, right? We have all this big picture that we want to do. Here's your bundle of pixels. Go make that happen. Go do, and then we'll put it together. Show me the picture. So my job then is to help you achieve that. And I can't do that if you don't have respect for me. And how can you have respect for me if I don't have respect for you?
100%.
And so we celebrate the differences. We got some very weird people here, including me. And we celebrate those differences and we use those. You know, when we're working with our clients, we try and find out what are their things and we apply the right people to it, you know? So one, I think giving everybody lots of latitude. I like to think of my chessboard here as being more of a dartboard. I sit in the middle and provide leadership on the way out. I don't like the hierarchy. I can't think of five times in the 9 years I've actually had to pull that trump card. You know, every now and then there has to be a dad, right? There has to be somebody that says, we're going this way, not that way, stop. And, you know, fortunately, that has worked out. And then the next thing is really this. Do you understand the job I'm asking you to do? I want you to tell me what you think that job is. And now that I think you really understand what the job is, you tell me what you think you need to get it done. Tools, budget, people, tell me what it is. We may have to negotiate a little on some of that.
Right.
But when we get to an agreement, okay, you got what you need. You understand what you have to do. Now go do it. You know, if it's 11:15 and, you know, you're not going to make it, I need to know before 11:30, not at 12:02.
Right.
In my environment, we get about 140 people, 135 odd people across the country. Here's the deal. Anybody at any level can make a decision. Now go make it. You will not be fired or terminated or chastised or reprimanded for making a bad decision as long as you don't do it twice. But you will get raked over the coals if you don't make a decision and you allow the circumstances to dictate the outcome of something.
Right. Because not to decide is to decide.
Yeah, you know, we used to call it empowerment, but it's not really empowerment. It's really enlightenment. And it gives them a sense of confidence. And when you've got confidence employees who know they're not going to get run over by a steamroller if they don't do things, you know, then they're willing to do a little extra. They're willing to take the leap. They're willing to make a decision, even though they're not used to that. And then they start thinking. I remember 2 days in, I had a bunch of the leadership people around the board table, and they were all asking questions. It was like, I said, stop. Everybody stop. I looked around the corner. I said, wait a second. Everybody in this room has a title which has manager somewhere in it. Manage. And I started a program that said, every time you come to me to make a decision for you, depending on the level of decision, it's going to cost you $360, $1,013, or $6,000.
So you were saying, look,
if I'm going to do your job,
you need to be able to make this decision. Otherwise, if you're making me to do it, you should pay me.
I'm getting paid. So a couple of times I actually, you know, took the money we gave back, obviously. It's not legal to do that. And I wouldn't do it, but it was to make the point. You know, and a couple of times doing that, everybody sort of said, okay, I get it. And the other thing I do around here is real simple. If there's a collective decision that has to be made, I said, look, what do you want to do with your mobile phones? You want to submit your bills and get repaid? You want a company program? You want a company? What do you want to do? This was early on, right? I asked them once, I didn't get an answer. I asked them twice, I didn't get an answer. On the third time, I said, this is what our company phone program is going to be. And everybody went, oh, okay. After that, they got it. Once, twice, mine.
Right, right. Going, going, gone.
You want input? Then you have it. But that means you have to act on that.
Amazing.
So that's it. I think it really all revolves around loving and respecting your people.
Oh, so I got a question for you. Has anyone ever refused to read the book?
Not that I know of.
I see. Okay.
I'm sure some may not have. Or may have skimmed. It's not like we sit down and give them a test.
Right, right.
We don't. So there may be one or two that don't. But you hear people in conversations, even in some of our pitches, you hear the book come up. You hear things from the book come up. So culturally, it's here, whether one person chooses to not read it or not. And my guess is the person that doesn't read it doesn't have that core understanding of who we are. And eventually, you know, like that little bit of a sliver that stays in, it hurts for a little bit and then it kind of slips out and goes away.
So what's been the result on culture and turnover or staff retention?
Well, there is a potential big problem here because you've got senior people that are getting bigger and better at their work and at their job and they want places to go. So we added real estate donations, a whole new division. We added our on-the-go division, which is, you know, providing transportation for seniors across the country. We're in 22 states. We're growing that nationally.
So you're doing all this because your staff were staying with you.
Yes. Well, plus I needed opportunity to grow. And coming again from for-profit, I understand that you need to grow organically, but you also need to go through acquisition. So I was trying to find things that fit, that we could provide additional services to. So we started a consulting group with people from the group that knew how to do the things that we were doing. And that's going pretty well.
So Howard, you've created this environment where it's high performing. People are making decisions. They're highly accountable. You've got this great culture. And you have what kind of retention rates?
Well, it's interesting. They just haven't left. We continue to give them new challenges. We continue to give them new opportunities, different aspects of the business. We continue to add interesting clients. I mean, who in the nonprofit space doesn't want to serve somebody like Purple Heart?
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to serve somebody like American Kidney? Who doesn't want to serve St. Jude?
Meals on Wheels.
Meals on Wheels. We do a couple of those. There's another organization that services most of those. And, you know, we respect that. We're not out here trying to run anybody or everybody else out of the arena yet. But I think part of your job as a leadership isn't just to grow the business, but it's to grow the business in a way that you do retain your staff, because the intellectual equity that they retain and that they bring and the cacophony of sound that they make working with all these extra instruments. Yes, we start up, you know, with a four-man band in the garage, and we're slowly building a symphony. So we add people, which adds more interesting character and nature in the business. But mostly, I think you've got to give them challenge. You've got to give them a runway.
Hmm.
And I'm sure, you know, in the next few years, I'm going to have some people that I'm going to want to graduate, that I'm going to say, you know, you need to be a CEO somewhere at a small place. You are really ready to go out there and do that. And if you stay here, you are not fulfilling your promise, ergo, I'm not fulfilling my promise to you. We'll get along without you. I don't want to, but the truth is you've got to give them opportunities to grow and go. They're not slaves. They are wonderful people who have helped you to reimagine what your business looks like and to reimagine what great customer service is, you know. Like on our on-the-go call center where we're dealing with seniors and dispatching rides and that sort of stuff. We use Uber Lyft and Uber Health. You know, their failure to show on their call center dispatches are significantly high for them. We have somewhere in the neighborhood of 1%. And the reason for that is because our culture here is, again, one of dignity, one of respect. So when we're booking these rides and talking to these people, sometimes you got to tell them 5 times. I need to make sure that I'm telling you, somebody who's probably the age of my mother, with the same grace and the same general attitude that I told you the first time, the 6th time. And I have to recognize that my job, whether I tell 6 different people the same thing once or if I tell one person 6 times, it's the same job. Our job is to retain their dignity and make sure they get to and back where they go and that their families are informed that they're back home and safe.
I want to make sure I understand. So you've got a service where seniors can get rides?
Yeah, it's called On the Go, otgrides.org. We've grown, right? On the Go was first started again by our parent social service agency here in San Diego regionally. And we saw the opportunity to take it across the country. So as I said, we're in 23 states now. We're doing work for many of the municipal governments, state governments, and so on. But we also have pilot programs going with Genentech, getting people to and from their trials, their drug trials. And we're working with their hemophilia group, which is great. We are in discussion, no decision yet, but we're in discussion with AARP for about 8,000 rides a month to try that out. Because what we know going forward, first off, there are 10,000 Americans that are turning 65 every day in this country, right? And we have to do something to provide them dignity in aging. And dignity in aging means freedom, means transportation.
Right, right.
And it's not just about getting to and from your doctor appointment. I want to go to my daughter's place who's having having an event on Sunday. I don't want her to have to come and get me when she's busy preparing, putting out the hors d'oeuvres or whatever it is she's doing. How about if I have the ability to just get there on my own? And so therefore, I've got a vibrant social life. And so I'm not depressed. I'm not dealing with loneliness. I realize Apple's answer to loneliness, you know, are the gargles. You want to go do your own shopping once or twice a month? You want to actually take your walker if you need it and go into the grocery store and look at those apples and say, oh, I want this one, you know, every now and again, because you want to be where there's other people and energy. That's what it should be. And there are other people that are barrier to transportation as well, right? People that are on the spectrum that work at these labs at night because they're wonderful people for that. Repetitive skills are just amazing. And their parents are aging out. Their parents are hitting their late 70s. And these are people on the spectrum. They're now in their 40s. You know, their parents can't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go pick them up anymore and drop them off at 11:30 at night. So we've got to be providing some kind of facility for these groups that are at risk. And so because our culture is to provide that category of service, we did take the model that we saw over at JFS here in San Diego and say, let's revamp that and see if we can do it without providing the vehicle, but using existing rideshare, which has opened up that kind of a creative attitude and atmosphere. So, and eventually, once we hit all the states, we'll go B2C. We'll do a retail business. You know, you grew up in Chicago, you stay there, but your parents retired to San Diego because it's warmer, or Florida. And you want to know when they're going to the doctor, you want to know they got there. More importantly, you want to know that they got home. So part of the high touch service is we'll call you or send you a note or send you a text that they're home. And you can either pay for that service or maybe they qualify for it civically. And if that's the case, then we'll make sure that they take advantage of that.
Wow, that is amazing. So with all of the different services that you've added, what kind of growth have you seen in terms of revenue? And I think this speaks to your margin.
Yeah, about 500%. When I got here, we were doing, you know, we had a top line of about 30 million. When I say top line, that's the gross revenue, the proceeds from all the sales of the vehicles and so on.
Sure.
Boils down to what we actually end up with. Because remember, our cost of goods is 80%. And so how do we end up with an EBITDA that's in the 30s is the other services and other fees that we do. So we spread those across a number of different for pay services that helps to underwrite the rest of this so we can continue to give these high margins back. Look, it's not as easy as it sounds. Obviously, everybody be in it. There's lots of challenges, but they're just ordinary business challenges that have to be dealt with in an ordinary way. So I have a phrase on here, like I like to remind people, look, we are just ordinary people doing ordinary things in an extraordinary way.
Ah.
It helps us strive to really achieve some excellence in what we're doing, but also remember that we are social servants. Humility has to be part of what we do. What we say amongst ourselves and how we dance up and down like leprechauns in the dark of the night is one thing, but we're a service business, a service industry, but we are a social service industry, and that is very, very different, and we need to understand that.
Well, Howard, this has been an amazing interview. I want to thank you for sharing your journey, for sharing all the things that you're doing, probably most importantly, for really sharing your philosophy for how you manage cars that's really allowed your staff to grow and learn and the organization to, what did you say, 500% growth since you got there. So congratulations. I hope you'll come back.
Oh my gosh.
And tell us about all the new things that you're doing, you know, in the coming years to serve people better.
My pleasure. Thank you for being interested in who we are and what we are. It's kind of you to give us some exposure. And we're here, we're available. And if you've got a nonprofit that's looking for a unique way to raise some capital, give us a call. Maybe it'll work out.
Yeah. And Howard, we'll be sure to put links in the show notes to your website, to your different programs, and to the book, The Gratitude Diaries.
I wish you would. It's an amazing little, it's a little miracle.
Well, I'm going to download it after this podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends. Bye!